Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Evening. We drew a bye last week, so we were not in the tournament last week. We got a week off, so we are back. This is Michael Morris, and as always, I am joined by the wonderful Georgia gentleman, Gary Oates and Bobby Simmons. How you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, guys.
Doing great. Doing great. How is life in Yankee land, man?
I haven't started saying yad. I took my clothes to the cleaners earlier this week, and I swear the lady that was working the counter at the cleaners, you thought she was imitating just doing the perfect imitation. She asked me where my tie was. But it's fun. Dear, you know, I am in Marshfield, Massachusetts.
Well, I know about that. That accent, I know about that. Believe me.
I'm 30 miles south of Boston, and I'm in this town in Plymouth. And if I go over to Plymouth, and I went this weekend, I did some touristy type things. I went over to Plymouth, and I saw the Plymouth Rock, and I saw the replica of the Mayflower, and I have a whole new respect for pilgrims now. That boat is tiny. It spent whatever length of time it took them to come from the old world to the new world. You can't get away from anybody. I'm surprised they didn't kill each other.
That's why they wound up with scurvy.
But I figured, Jerry, if I got in the water at Plymouth Bay, if I walked far enough, sooner or later I'd get to Tybee Island.
Yeah, you could just come down the coast there.
They made a movie about a guy that took off walking like that named Forrest Gump.
Yes, really. What are we talking about, Tybee? I'd like to say special hello to Angie Anderson. She's the court clerk down there at Tybee. She's one of the great people that work down there.
Uh-oh, you must
be getting in trouble down there. Let me know. We'll go see her.
He's getting a plug in to get that ticket fixed.
Yeah, I was fixing to say, you must have got a speeding ticket, and he's trying to...
Who, me? Not me, brother. Not me.
But, guys, I did something on the way up here. I added three more states to my list coming up here that I'd never been to before. I've never been to Connecticut. I've never been to Rhode Island. I've never been to Massachusetts. I've been to all three now. I came through Stamford. I wasn't looking hard, but I didn't see the Vincent building. He wasn't on the interstate hitchhiking or anything when I came through, so I didn't see him. But I drove through the Bronx in New York, and I've never done that before, and good Lord willing, I'll never have to do it again.
Well, you had to go on the Yankee Stadium.
No. What I did, and it's weird, I noticed it coming up, I noticed it last year, too, when I was coming up, the Interstate I-95 is not it's not like 20 or 85 or anything like that. It breaks up and goes onto surface roads into certain cities. As I was going to New Jersey from North Carolina, coming up 95, I had to get off and go down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., and then got on Delaware or something, one of the other maybe to Virginia, another highway, but it was still considered the same route as I-95. It had both signs. Same thing today. Coming up here, I was tooling along 95, and next thing I know, my GPS is telling me to take the Washington Bridge exit. And this is coming out of New Jersey, and I'm thinking, why in the world would I be going into New York City? So I just followed my GPS and followed it. I got halfway across the Washington Bridge, and my GPS lost signal. And I thought, great, I'm going to wind up in Harlem or somewhere I don't want to be, and I don't have GPS signal or anything. But it came back on, but I noticed all I had to do was follow the signs that said I-95. Even though I was on surface roads, there were still signs that said it. So I ended up going through the Bronx, and I saw a neat cemetery that I would, if I'd had time, I'd have stopped and gone into it, because the headstones were right on top of each other. I guess they died and buried on the way they lived, all on top of each other.
Hmm.
But it was interesting, to say the least. It was an interesting ride up there, an interesting 8 hours.
I've only been to New York City one time in my life. We went up, we took a vacation, and we went up, we went to Philadelphia, and we did the tourist thing there for a day and saw the Liberty Bell and all that good stuff. And then we drove up, we got up, and I purposely did it on a Sunday. We got up early Sunday morning out of Philly and drove up the New Jersey Turnpike to the Statue of Liberty. And when we got out of the Statue of Liberty, it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, and we were coming back down to Washington, D.C. to stay 3 or 4 days. And I said, well, let's ride over into Manhattan since we're here, just so we can say we've been. And you have to, you know, you learn in school Manhattan's an island, but you can't really visualize that it's an island when you're standing there looking at it.
Yeah.
But we had to go through the Holland Tunnel to get over there, and we got over there, and we looked, and we seen some neat stuff. I mean, the only thing, Jerry said Yankee Stadium. That's the only thing I wanted to see. I wanted to see Yankee Stadium. And I knew it was in the Bronx, but I figured if I got over there looking around, I could figure out where I was going. Boy, was I forever wrong. We got so twisted. All the buildings are so big that the horizon looks the same, and it never changes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it never changes. And I'm like, geez. And you know how, I mean, I drive a lot of times by landmarks and stuff, and I'm like, oh, geez. So we finally stopped, and we asked this guy how to get back to the Holland Tunnel, and he told us, he said, for $20, I'll tell you how to get there. And I said, never mind, I'll run out of gas, so I'll give you $20. And we eventually got out of there, but... Man, I would love to go up there for a couple of days when somebody knew their way around. But, that's another world.
Yeah, as I was coming across and going through the Bronx, there were people running up on my back end and honking horns and zipping around me and stuff. And I got aggravated. I thought, look, jokers, I'm from the Big Apple of the South. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm going to show you guys. I know how to. So I got in there and was honking and whipping and zipping and zacking just like the rest of them. I felt right at home. I said, if I can ride on 285, I can ride through the Bronx. That's not going to be
you
a problem.
You can, exactly.
Well, you know, that's another thing I noticed up there. You never get a second where you don't hear a siren or a horn blow. I mean, the noise is constant. And I guess it's like anything else. Those people get used to that nonsense. But, God, what a horrible. I mean, I can't imagine living there.
I wouldn't live up there for free.
No, me neither. I'm sort of, you know, no offense to nobody intended, but, you know, I figure anybody that lives north of Marietta is you know, you're bordering Yankee north of Marietta. So, that's a different world.
But this area is nice. Of course, the town I'm staying in is, and it was founded in 1620. And there's some cemeteries and some homes around here that are probably dating back to that time. But the most famous thing about Marshfield is three members of Aerosmith are from here and still live here, including Stephen Tyler. So if I see him, I'll give him circus tickets.
Yeah, tell him Bobby and I said hello.
Yeah.
Hello? What did you say, Gary?
I said, be sure and tell him Bobby and I said hello.
Yeah, I will. I'll see if there's an opening on American Idol. Like,
yeah, please. That'd be good.
Yeah, do that.
But they offer a harbor tour that I think I'm going to do while I'm up here. I tend not to do a whole lot of stuff by myself because I don't like to do stuff. But I figured I'm this close to this much historical stuff. I'm gonna take advantage of it.
Oh, I certainly would.
And one of the things I am going to do, and this is going to be sound creepy, but I'm only about 20 minutes from Fall River. If you guys know the history of Fall River, Massachusetts.
I'm afraid I don't, sir.
I bet Debbie Simmons does.
She might, but she's in another room.
I only know about the Chattahoochee River.
Yeah.
Fall River is a little town in Massachusetts, and the house is still there and everything. That was the hometown of Lizzie Borden. And the house that she chopped her parents up in.
Yeah, took an axe and gave her mama 40 whacks.
Won't you spend the night there one night while you're there?
Well, I was going to say, the house is actually a bed and breakfast and a museum, and you can stay in the room where she chopped her mother up.
Listen, I've done a lot of things with that.
Yeah.
You sure I sleep well.
Well, actually, one of the things on my list of my bucket list of things to do, there is a roadside motel that is now a boarding house. Let me think where it is. It's in Iowa or somewhere where Bonnie and Clyde stayed, and that's where they had their big shootout. And you can stay in the room that they stayed in. I wouldn't mind doing that. Nobody died in that room.
Gets whacked in there.
Listen, let me get this. This is a true story here, Mr. Oaks. You're talking about him staying in that room. When me and Debbie first got married, the first year we were married, her dad, his family is from DeRidder, Louisiana, and I went to DeRidder to meet her family. Have you ever been? I'm sure you probably went through DeRidder or seen it when you were down there.
What's it close to, Bobby?
It's 18 miles from the Texas line. It's north of Lake Charles and south of Shreveport. It's kind of between the two.
I'm sure I travel through there at night.
We stayed at her aunt's home. And when we got there, she told me, said, now, Debbie and me are going to sit up and talk most of the night. I said, so you just go on to bed, and Debbie will just stay up here with me. They had some beds up there in another room. And I said, well, that's fine. So I went back, and I went to bed in this room. And the next morning, I heard people talking, and you know, you're in a strange house, and you don't really know these people that well, but I heard people talking, and I heard Debbie's voice, so I opened one eye, and I looked. And they were in this room I was sleeping in. I didn't see it when it went in there because it was dark, but it was a huge room, and there was pictures all over the wall. And they're in there looking at the pictures and talking. And I just kind of opened my eyes, and I said, what are y'all doing? And Debbie's aunt turned around and said, we're looking at all the pictures of the people that have laid corpse in this room.
It wasn't a funeral parlor, was it?
No, it seems that they had the biggest room of anybody in the family, so when somebody died down there, they'd bring the body over to their house, and that's where everybody would sit up with the body. So I proceeded to just climb my big butt right out of the bed and get dressed. I didn't figure I needed to be there no more.
You didn't wake up with somebody standing over you with a Polaroid, did you?
No.
Oh, man. Well, before we take a break, and I get Mr. Friend on the line, if we have been on the air since the last time we were on the air, I should say, we've lost three members of our fraternity. Lost a gentleman I mainly worked in Arizona in the late 70s and 80s. His name was Russ Walters. He and his brother, Dave Walters, worked out there at the Lumberjacks. And Russ was Lumberjack number one. And he passed away a couple weeks ago. And just within the last couple of days, a gentleman by the name of Dale Skinner, who mainly worked Eastern Canada, passed away. And, of course, the one that hit closest, I think, to the three of us, because he was just on our show a few months ago, was Gorgeous George Jr.
Jeez.
And that one was a shock. and a good friend of Jimmy. I don't know if you were ever around Charlie Platt or not.
Yes, I was.
He had a heart attack last Saturday and was in intensive care. They put him on a respirator. As of, and I haven't heard but one update, and this was the night before last, Bob Kelly's been talking to a guy by the name of Pedro that used to run Legend shows down in Dothan. Charlie, they were starting to wean him off the respirator. So, and if that was the case, he greatly improved. So,
where's Charlie living now?
He's still in Dothan.
Is he really?
Yes, sir. And I, not for any reason, but keep him in your thoughts and prayers because he's a big friend of the circus too. Because whenever we go to Dothan, he really promotes us. He has us on his show all the time. And everything. He still does an early morning. It's a what you really call it. It's like the old time farm reports and weather reports and stuff like he does that early mornings on. I don't know what channel it is. It's not the same channel that we used to do the wrestling programs on. But it's another channel there, and he's been doing that for years and years and years. And he's had Ken Lucas on his show. He's had Don Carson on his show, you know, several going back several years. But he's still maintaining a connection to the wrestling business. Used to come to the Gulf Coast reunion all the time. He hasn't been in a few years.
Yeah, that was the last time I saw him was at the reunion.
Yeah, it's what 3 or 4 years ago Bobby was last.
Something like that, yeah. I think when Dick Dunn died, it kind of took a lot out of him.
Yeah. So
that's about the time he stopped coming. So it's been longer than it. Well, I think he, but yeah, you're right. He came 3 or 4 years ago, but that's the first time he had been in a while.
Well, I hope he does all right.
Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. And much too young to be going through stuff like this.
Yeah, the Gorgeous George thing, you're right, Mike, that kind of all hit us because, you know, we had just talked to him, and he was just a super guy.
He seemed to be doing good.
Yeah, he just, well, evidently he went in, he got to hurting in his hip or something, and they took him in to examine the hip and found out he had Mercer, and they kept him in the hospital, and they were doing, you know, getting rid of the infection. And they had to actually open him up and scrape some of it out. But when they opened him up to scrape it out, they found a tumor. And that's when they found out he had cancer.
Well, that'll be dope.
And that's what got him. But I thought of this story that Charlie Smith has told me many times. They were working for Ron Fuller up in Knoxville. And they were somewhere in Kentucky. And they were working the match. They went to the ring that night. And Charlie was giving was refereeing, and he was giving the instructions, and George asked him, said, Charlie, he said, would you like a half a case of beer? And he said, well, yeah, why? He said, well, some guy back here told me if I'd beat the crap out of you, he'd give me a case of beer. And Charlie said, well, just go for it. So when the match was over, he proceeded to turn on Charlie and just beat the crap out of him, and the guy gave George a case of beer, and him and Charlie split it.
And I'm sure Charlie sold it.
Not, probably so, at a premium price.
Oh, man. And before I do take a break, I want to just say, I don't know if you guys remember this gentleman or not. He was on Ringside Rap with Rich and Lance last night. And, Gary, you may have worked with him in Georgia. You may have come across him in Kansas City. Bobby, I think when he was in Georgia, you were with Gunkel. A gentleman by the name of Jay French.
Jay French. Name's real familiar.
He was in the Carolinas, too, Jerry, so you may have crossed paths with him there.
That don't ring a bell at all.
He was mainly an opening card, you know. He refereed quite a bit. He came into Mobile, refereed and wrestled for a short time. Worked in Montgomery for Bill Golden. I think that was after you and Ted were there, Jerry. I think he was there late 72, early 73, something like that.
I could have crossed paths with him, Mike. I'm not sure. You know.
He has written a novel based on what it's like to be breaking into the wrestling business in the 70s. It's and it's basically just that he's going to do a series of them. But the show last night was very good. I recommend anybody that didn't listen to last night's show go listen to the archive of it. But I've been in touch with Jay today, and we're going to have him on our show in the future. So, great guy, though. Just great guy. So, well, I think once we've got him on the show, Jay, you guys will connect. And somewhere along the line, you probably crossed paths.
I'm sure.
But anyway, let's take a real quick break, and then when we come back, I'll get Personal A Friend on the line with us, and we'll go from there.
All righty.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Bill Bowman answers the phone, you know, it didn't work.
Everybody's phone.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I got it. Hello?
Hey, Al. This is Michael Morris, Bobby Simmons, and Jerry Oates. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Jerry Oates, my gosh. It's the same Jerry Oates that used to wrestle.
Yeah. Call it that.
If I could call it that, the last time I seen you was in Kansas City.
That's right.
That's right. By
that's
golly.
A while ago.
Yeah. I guess.
Let me give you a proper introduction now.
Alrighty.
Pandemonium, the epitome of wrestling managers, Mr. Percival A. Friend.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure to have you on the show. Especially in Kansas City, you don't have an Oates Brothers T-shirt, do you?
You know, I had an Oates Brothers ashtray once. Oh, no, I better stop that. Jerry was a good guy, I'll tell you what. Him and Teddy were big names there in Kansas City for quite a while.
I appreciate that.
No problem, sir. You guys had a lot of battles up against Big Ron Bass and that other character that was out there. Name just kind of...
Wayne Calvin.
Who?
Wayne Calvin.
Nope, wasn't That's him. Nice. Dutch Mantel.
Same person. That is Wayne Calvin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you know, I lose track of real important names. But that happens when you get over 50. See what you got to look forward to?
Yeah, I'll get there one day.
Hey, I want to give a shout-out to a couple friends of mine in the Atlanta area that may possibly be listening, if I could.
Sure.
Okay, Bobby Simmons. The world's greatest referee, and also Melissa Coates.
Bobby's on the air with us.
I just don't
say a whole lot. I learn more that way.
Well, sometimes that's good.
Yes, it is.
You know, Bobby, I've heard that you bring joy into a room.
Well, when I can get her to come with me, I do.
Sometimes by coming in and sometimes by leaving.
Yes, you got that right.
Oh, my goodness sakes. This is starting out to be a real good one. So what has Mr. Oates been up to for the last maybe years?
I moved back to Columbus and still did a lot of wrestling. I opened a gym and did a lot of wrestling while I still had my gym, and had that for 25 years, and got rid of my gym, and did some promoting there for a while, and
then I moved
to Savannah, Georgia.
Well, bless your heart, Savannah's a good town.
I love it here.
I spent a week there one day.
One day. What the hell was that?
You Oates brothers were very fortunate. You came in after Black Angus left Kansas City. You know, he could have given you guys some very, very good matches. Probably took on both of you and won.
Yeah, the only time I was around him was when I was in Dallas.
Okay.
That's the only time I was ever around him.
Yeah, that was after we split up. Angus was... He was a right-hand man to me, and I'll tell you what, we went up and down those highways of life for over 3 years side by side and never raised our voices at each other.
Where did he, I ran up on him in Dallas in 73.
Mm-hmm.
And where did he go from there? I never did hear any more about him.
Well, he went up to the Pacific Northwest, and then he went down to Florida for a little while. And then he went back to Scotland, and that's where he passed on.
Is that right?
About 2 years ago, yeah. I was very sad when I heard the news, because Billy Robinson had told me a few years before that, when I bumped into him out at the Hall of Fame out in Waterloo, Iowa, that Angus had passed away a number of years back. And I took him at his word and probably shouldn't have, but you know how those Englishmen lie. Oh, but anyways, I've heard so much about this program, and I was asked the other day to come and be on it, and truly it is a pleasure for me to be here. I am humbled.
All the best to have you. You're best known as a manager in the Kansas City area, but you were actually a wrestler for several years prior to becoming a manager. How did you get hooked up in the wrestling business?
Well, initially I was asked to be a guest ring announcer one night in Flint, Michigan, and a couple weeks later I was asked to substitute for a referee that was violently ill when he got to the building. And I did well. And when I was refereeing, there was an old wrestler there by the name of Bulk Estes that did a lot of promoting in the tri-state area. of Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. And he asked me if I had done any wrestling, and I said a little. And he asked if I could come down to, of all places, Toledo, Ohio. And that's where I'm headquartered at right now. And wrestle against the good Dr. Jerry Graham at the Toledo Sports Arena. And I said, well, sure, it'd be my pleasure to come down. And I ended up going and wrestling him and ended up getting both ankles sprained, but I won the match by disqualification. So it worked out very well for me, and I was under a mask for the first 7 years that I wrestled as the Green Hornet. But I had a lot of fun. I met a lot of people, and for 2.5 years, I was under the tutelage of one of my surrogate fathers, Buddy Nature Boy Rogers. And wow. He booked me all over the United States. I tell you, back in the day, it was nothing to take and ride 400 or 500 miles in a car and then wrestle and then get in the car and go some more. As you guys would, you know, being in the business for over, well, the last 25 years anyways, that's been a common thing. Nowadays, I imagine that some of the guys would take a bellyache at driving 60 miles. But, you know, things have changed. You know, people change. Times change. You know, most of the younger stars nowadays, they want to get in a jet plane or a corporate plane and fly to all the shots, which is good. You know, I don't blame them for that. You know, that's something I wish I could have done.
Where did you go when you left Kansas City, when Ted went back out to Kansas City?
I went to Amarillo for a little while and had a lot of fun down there. I managed Bobby Hart as the Patriot, and Bobby and I would take and fly at least once a week down. He had a corporate lease plane that he had there in Amarillo, and it was a Cessna 180 six-placer. And we would fly either to Brownsville or down to Abilene and wrestle down there for the lawman. And then I went back to Kansas City after that in 76.
Now, was Bobby by himself in the Patriots? Because he and Bob Griffin were the Patriots in Mobile for a while. They were all in Florida together.
Uh-huh. Bobby was by himself. He had just finished up in Tennessee, and his partner there was Lorenzo Parenti.
Right, right.
And I enjoyed Bobby a lot. I mean, he was a funny guy on the road. To see him walk into a gas station from his car, which had Tennessee plates on it, and walk in with his hat turned kind of sideways on his head, you know, like a common day rapper would wear, and walk in there and cross his eyes and look at the guy and ask him where Boise, Idaho was at. I mean, you had to be there. I mean, it was funnier than heck. And, well, we did a lot of strange, funny things when we were on the road, but that was part of the life of being in professional wrestling. You traveled, you thought a lot about what you could do, not only to your opponents in the ring, but how to pull practical jokes and ribs on people. I was not real notorious for it, but I had pulled a couple in my time, so I'll just let it take and stay at that. I just returned, by the way, from New York. I went up to Amsterdam to the Hall of Fame there, to the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, and seen Bruno get his ring from his induction from 2002, they also honored Dominic DiNucci, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, George Gordienko, and also Wendy Richter. And I thought the evening was very, very nice up there. I got a chance to take and hang out with a few people that I had not seen in a number of years. One of them was Billy Two Rivers. I hadn't seen him in probably 10 or 12 years since I was out at the Cauliflower Alley Club. And today he's in a wheelchair and a little bit heavier than he used to be, but still has a great sense of humor. He wanted to sell me, he called it the old Indian barter, and Bobby Simmons should know about this, but he said he wanted to take and sell me a horse, but it had to be after dark because he said, I'm sorry, but the horse is blind and it's also humpbacked. That's the old Indian barter, I guess. But Billy was quite the life of the party there at the Hall of Fame, and I really, really enjoyed seeing him. And I got a chance to play cribbage against Nikolai Volkov, who was there. We also had Frenchie Martin. Tommy Dreamer was there. Mick Foley came in. There was a number of guys from the old Pittsburgh office and a number there from the New York area that attended. They had probably, I would say, 400 people in the room for the inductions, and it was very, very heartwarming to see it and also, you know, to just to be a part of it. And the thing that I thought that was the greatest is right before the actual induction started, they were calling off names of celebrities, and they called off some old boy by the name of Percival A. Friend. And let me tell you what, my throat just went right straight down into my ankles when I heard my name come off. But I stood up like the true pro that I was and accepted their applause. And I'll tell you what, it felt great. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Were you from Flint, Michigan originally?
Yes, sir, I was. Born in Flint and raised there until I was around, I think I was either 16 or 17. No, 18. 18 when I left Flint. And went on the road and just had myself a lot of fun.
That's the hometown of one of my favorite bands, Grand Funk Railroad.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I did not know that. I actually went the first time to wrestling in 1956, and that'll kind of tell you how old that I am. I was 11 at the time, and we went to the old Flint IMA Auditorium, and they had a special running there that night, and I got a chance to meet some pretty big names in the wrestling business, like Bobo Brazil, who I remained friends with for 42 years, Dick Garza, who later went on to become the Mighty Igor, and I also met some of the midgets that night, Sky Lolo and Fuzzy Cupid, and Irish Jackie, who was from Flint. And, I can't think of the other guys. Jim Hadee was on the card. And I don't know whether you know of him or not, but the guy had a neck bigger than his head. And he was a fantastic kid in the ring. He was from Detroit, and he could go in the ring for sure.
Did he pass? I don't remember if it was in Hawaii or where it was, but he passed away. Either in the ring or in the dressing room right after a match.
In the dressing room, and it was in Hawaii at the HIC. Mm-hmm.
He was young, wasn't he?
Yep, he was a good kid, Jim Hadee was. The only guy I ever seen that from an extended wrist lock down and him being on his back, he would bridge up and scoot completely across the ring on the top of his head. And I'd never, ever seen anybody else do that. It was a great move, and it helped him out a lot over the years.
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would imagine you're familiar with the name Larry Shane, then.
Larry was my other surrogate father. He was the one that taught me. We got down on the mats at the YMCA, and he actually taught me some wrestling holds. Not for the first couple of months, but after that, he taught me some wrestling holds. I came home many, many nights after working out with him with skinned up elbows, and my shoulder blades were all mat burned, and I had mat burns across my eyebrows and my nose. He was a pretty doggone good wrestler in the ring itself, and he taught me that perseverance would take and hold out, and if you can hold up against me, you can go. So that was the thing that I lived by, and I earned his respect. And unfortunately, he was killed in a single car accident coming back from, I believe it was Wisconsin. He had went from Detroit up there and worked on a card and was coming back, and his car left the road at 120 mile an hour.
Jeez.
And needless to say, there was not much left of that 70 or 61 Chrysler. So, oh boy, I miss the guy a whole lot. He was a very, very funny guy, but he was all about wrestling. He didn't pull any punches. If somebody thought they could take him, he would give him a chance and then twist him up and spit him out like yesterday's garbage. Kind of like the way Ted used to do.
Yeah.
Ain't that right, Teddy?
He'd try it.
Okay. All right. So, anyways, I'm a big supporter also of the Cauliflower Alley Club and been out there for like the last 12 years on a yearly basis. And about 8 years ago, we started out with a cribbage tournament. A lot of the guys used to play cribbage back in the day in the dressing rooms and on trains and planes and however that, you know, we traveled. But it was a way of letting off steam. And Big Buyer decided he wanted to start a cribbage tournament and turn the proceeds over to the Benevolent Fund for the Cauliflower Club. And that helps those that need, not those that just want it. And so far during the past number of years that I've been in charge of the tournament itself, we've raised over $3,000 that we put into the Benevolent Fund. And I feel pretty good about that. This year, our winner was Ricky Itaki, who was from Los Angeles. I think they used to bill him. I think initially he's from Tokyo, but I'm not for certain. But I know that he lives in Los Angeles now, and I was happy as heck to see him take and go the three falls and get the win. It did my old heart good to see that. What else can I tell you about? I am all open.
Where all did you work as a wrestler before you settled in Kansas City?
I worked in Detroit. I worked in Mobile for a little while, Amarillo. I was in and out of the Carolinas with Buddy Rogers, and worked upstate New York for Vince Sr., and I worked in Montreal for Jack Britton, and also worked in Kansas for a little while before I went to Kansas City, and that's where I met Angus. Quite a lot of the different places that we went to, Buddy was traveling a lot of the different territories, so I was in and out, mostly just in there as a an enhancement wrestler, so to speak. And I did my job and went down the highway, burn up two cars a year at least, running up and down the highway. And I'd usually turn them in with anywhere from 65 to 70,000 miles on them twice a year. So I did a little bit.
You didn't know Ken Ramey, did you?
Yes, sir, I did. He isn't gone, is he?
No.
Oh, my gosh. No, I was one of the two guys that inducted him into the Cauliflower Alley Hall of Fame. And myself and Tom Andrews from Kansas City inducted him. So it was quite a deal. Ken is quite the man for what he has been through and what's transpired with his body. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want any part of what he went through, but that I'm very proud and honored and happy to call him my friend. That's for sure. You know, and we talk about injuries and so forth that everybody has had. I've had my fair share, both in and out of the ring. I've had both little fingers busted. I've got a knuckle that's pushed back on.
Are we still there?
Still there? I'm here.
I'm still here. I think we.
I'm getting a horrible echo.
His phone was cutting out. I think we may have lost.
He didn't know Rain or Rain was.
Now we're getting a bad echo. Let me, I just put him on. Let me try and call him again. If we can get him back on.
You hit the disconnect?
Call failed. Was not answered now, so. And he doesn't have caller ID. It's on that separate phone, so he won't know where to.
Yes, sir.
Hey,
somewhere or another we got cut off.
Yeah, your phone was cutting in and out, and then it went away totally. But anyway, we were talking about Ken Ramey.
We were talking about
your injuries, and I was going to ask if you got all those just working with Jerry Oates.
Well, some of them. Some of them. I won't give everything to Jerry now.
I appreciate that.
There was a few other. There was just a little bit more stern than he was. I can tell you this. When you were in the ring with him, you knew that you were in there with somebody. Almost like being hooked up with Dan Hodge.
Oh,
don't spread that rumor. Don't get that started.
Oh, do you know Mr. Hodge?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. You know, he just turned 80
Sunday before
last? Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be done.
And
well,
I
that's what I was waiting on him to
right.
turn 80. I believe I can get him now.
I'm going to hold you to that. Listen, you're going to have to get in line right behind Jerry Briscoe. I told Jerry about Hodge turning 80, and he said, good, I'm going to fly up to his hometown, and I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to kick the living snot right out of him right in front of his family. And I said, Jerry, you better wake up because I think you're dreaming. I'm going to tell you what, that Mr. Hodge, I might be the epitome of wrestling managers, but he was the elite when it came to performance in the ring.
Oh.
That guy could get it done.
Yes, sir.
And if you didn't believe him, let him shake your hand. No, I tell you, a rib that they used to have out on Oklahoma TV, when we did Oklahoma City TV, the old-timers would grab somebody brand new that had just come in. They knew that he was going to be wrestling against Hodge. And they would take him off to the side and tell him, listen, when you go in the ring and you hook up with him in a collar and elbow position or collar and arm position, slap him right across the face. He loves it.
Not me, brother.
Not me. I had heard about that, and I didn't want to take and go along with the program, so to speak. I think I walked away from the ring happier by not slapping him.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
I know what would have happened. I probably would have got torn right in half. Oh, but anyways, Danny's been a good friend of mine since the late 60s, and I've got quite a few friends that go back some years, you know, but then again, over the past years, we've lost a lot of our brotherhood from the ring, and I miss every one of them. Heck, the first time I went out to Cauliflower back in 2000, I walked into the room at the top of the tower there at the Riviera, and who's sitting there but Sputnik Monroe? And I looked at him, I said, Sputz, where the heck you been? He said, I've been looking for you. Where you been? And we sat down and talked like we had been together, you know, every day for the last 100 years, and I hadn't seen him in over 25 years at that point. And Big Tex McKenzie, I bumped into him later on that evening and reminded him about a match that he had over in Australia where the manager was put up into a cage up above the ring, and he was only 6 foot above the mat apron, and old Tex was like 6'5", and they had the manager in one of those little portable cages, and Tex was wrestling against Killer Carl Cox. And somehow or another, during the match, he knocked Cox out of the ring and turned around and grabbed down to the bottom of that cage and pushed it straight out away from the ring, turned around, and he's hollering at the people, yay, I got him now. And that cage came back and slapped him right in the back of the head, knocked him colder than a cucumber. Oh, and needless to say, Carl Cox got in the ring and lifted his limp body and tried to body slam him and ended up falling on his back, and McKenzie got the 1-2-3 and never knew how he got it. He still swears right up to the point of time where he had passed away that I was the one that projected that cage back and slapped him in the back end of the head. No, it didn't happen that way. So, at any rate, you know, there's been a lot of fun things that have happened in the ring and out of the ring. I can, you know, relate to a lot of different things that have happened. But overall, I've had a wonderful time. I look back on the profession that I was in, the sport I was in, and I loved it. And I liked everybody that was there, in spite of if they were from Columbus, Georgia or not. I liked them.
It's so kind of
what?
Me.
Well, no. Oh, that's right. You were from Columbus. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. I'm losing my mind. Oh well. At any rate.
A minute ago, you mentioned Mobile, and I'm kind of the unofficial historian for that.
Okay.
What year you were there?
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking 68, 69. I came down with Stan Frazier.
Okay.
And I was his manager for a little bit. And he was working as the convict at the time.
Okay.
Of course, everybody knew who he was, being, you know, that small of a territory. You know,
yeah.
You could come back with a mask on, but how many seven-footers are there in the area? Not many. So
probably 68.
Well, probably, yeah, it was somewhere back in there, but I didn't do any wrestling. I did a few matches refereeing and some spot shows that I can remember, but most of the time I was just managing Stan, but I had to get away from the guy. The guy had an obsession with doing some different things, and I didn't want to be a part of it, so I left and went back to Michigan and started working again for the Sheik, and ended up working for him for like 6 or 7 years before I went up to Calgary.
What made you decide to become a manager?
Less beatings on my body, and I could talk fairly well back then. I still do, not too awful bad, but I could talk better than I could wrestle. Some people said that anyways. I won't mention any names, but
It didn't come from Columbus, Georgia.
Are you sure?
I promise.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, I enjoyed my time out in Kansas City quite a bit. I enjoyed Amarillo, all the different places that I went, and never really had any unkind words for anybody. And I retired. I got away from the business in 76 when my family was new and I had a new daughter, and decided that I wanted to be home with her, and that was the end of me. So I did my time and went home, and I worked for Standard Oil of Ohio for about 13 years, and then just recently retired from a place that made envelopes for the commercial trade. And my job was to put a self-seal or a latex seal on the flap and on the envelope to where all you had to do was just slap them together, and they were there. So that was a job that I had, and I retired October of last year, or of the year before, and I've been having a lot of fun since then. I've been able to, I've actually been busier since I've retired than what I was when I was working. It's
we
all those honeydew jobs.
Mobile.
I'm sorry?
I said we need to get down to Mobile to the reunion in Mobile.
I'm going to try and make it there this next year. This year it was too close to the cauliflower, and I run out of money. Can you believe that?
I can fix that for you. When you leave Toledo, go through Savannah, pick up Jerry.
That's what I was getting to. Then swing by and pick me up.
Swing by and get you and Bill White and come ahead on, huh?
Where's White?
Where's White?
Yeah.
He's in South Carolina.
Is he really?
Yes, sir. He's up in Greenville, Spartanburg area.
Is that right? I haven't seen
him
in years.
And he's still kicking around. Matter of fact, he wrestled on a card not too awful long ago. Maybe I shouldn't even be talking about that. But anyways, he's still around. He was up to a reunion that we had up at Scott Teal's place with all the guys that was from Tennessee that had worked for Gulas. And since I had a couple of days work in Tennessee, I went and had the time of my life there. And, of course, I bumped into Gorgeous George Jr., who just passed away a couple weeks ago. And during the afternoon of the actual dinner thing that Scott had, he come out the door. He had one of his old outfits on, strutting like a big peacock, and he was handing out Georgie pins. And, of course, I had to get me one, so I did. But that was good meeting him. Cora Combs came over and gave me a great big old hug and turned and hugged somebody else. And then she turned back to me. She said, "Did you get your hug yet?" And I said, "No, ma'am." And so she hugged me again. And about halfway through it, she says, "Wait a minute. I just gave you a hug." But, I'll tell you who else I got to see in New York. Johnny Mae Young. Yes. The Mae Young, and she said she was my new sweetheart. I have that way, you know, with hugging old timers like that. I don't know, it just kind of fits in. But I enjoyed talking with her, and you know, just hanging out with her there at the hotel. She's quite a lady, and you know, information that you can get from her, you can't get from anybody else. You know, you can only learn from experience. You can't learn from what you're going to do in the future. And that's a nice thing about being retired from the sport of pro wrestling. I can give back when I want to, and that makes it very, very nice. you know, for the up-and-comers that are going to be the lifeline of our profession and our sport for many, many years to come. So, Mr. Oates, when are you coming out to Cauliflower Alley Club?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think anybody wants to see me.
Why?
I have no idea.
You weren't that stiff.
Let me jump in here now with that comment. He told me the greatest line 2 weeks ago, and he don't think it's funny, but I just kind of fell off the couch here listening to it. He said he hooked up with Frank Hickey. And he said the first
man.
Thing Hickey asked him was, "Kid, are you smart?"
The spaceman. Oh, my gosh.
Before I come to Cauliflower Alley, we got to let this Hodge thing settle down.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, we can stop in Perry, Oklahoma if you want to, you know, really, you know, go at it. You know, Hodge was the guy that gave Buddy Roberts his cauliflower ear.
Well, listen, I don't want to get smacked around by an 80-year-old.
And Buddy went and had it drained, and the next night Hodge gave him another one. And four nights straight in a row, and finally Hodge gave up on him. But you know the reasoning why that he got four cauliflower ears out of it? Hodge was on the mat. I guess he was looking at Robert's girlfriend, and Roberts came up and booted him right between the shoulder blades, like him to kick him right clean out of the ring. I guess he was getting his attention. I don't know. But, you know, that's Hodge won't own up to that story. He said he didn't hear that one, so I don't know. But I was there. I can tell you what happened. So, anyways, what about any good ribs that anybody's pulled?
Well, that's what I alluded to when I asked you about having an Oates Brothers T-shirt.
Well,
Jerry never forgives me because I bring this up as often as I possibly can.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you were in Kansas City when this happened or not, but go ahead and tell the story, Jerry.
Do I have to?
Was that the time that you had that van with the shiny windows? Was that
Ted's
same time
van,
period?
Yeah, that was Ted.
Okay. And one of you guys drove a Corvette.
That was Ted.
That was Ted. Okay. All right. So go ahead with the story anyways. I'm sorry.
Well, we go to Wichita, all right? And
right.
We knew it was going to be sold out, so I had some
Century 2 Auditorium.
That
yep.
is correct. He had been in Japan, so I knew it was going to be, I mean, it was sold out. So I had some Jerry Oates T-shirts printed.
Uh-huh.
And back then I paid $2 a piece for them. I was going to sell them for $5. So Geigel says, I got there, I told him, I said, Bob, I said, I got these T-shirts to sell. He said, good. He said, I'll get the guy to help you get them, sell them for you. I said, okay. So anyhow, he got this guy. His name was Billy. I'll never forget. He's a punch-drunk fighter.
Uh-oh.
So I go up there and tell him, I mean, I had all my good sizes. I had two huge boxes of T-shirts.
Right.
So I tell Billy, I said, look, Billy, I said, these shirts are $5 a piece. I got you. I said, they're $5 each. I got you. So we got there early and, so about 45 minutes before the matches started, he goes downstairs and he comes up. He says, man, he said, you have a good night. I said, what are you talking about, man? He said, I'm telling you, man. He said, it's 45 minutes before it starts and everybody out there's got one of your shirts on. So this kept on and on and on. Ted said, everybody's got one of those shirts on. I said, good. I'm sitting there figuring. I said, man, I'm going to have me a night here. That was the hurdle back then. You know, this is in 1975. So the matches start, and, you know, it's packed. So about halfway through, Geigel comes upstairs, and he calls Ted outside. So I don't know what they're talking about. You know, I guess telling, you know, Ted been in Japan for a month, and
had a big angle going, and so all, now the word spreads around the dressing room. So Geico comes in. He had asked Ted. He said, "You want to tell your brother, or you want me to tell him?" Ted said, "Oh no, you tell him."
You should have felt it coming right then.
Well, I don't know anything about it because this happened
out
in
the hall.
So Geico comes in.
Okay.
All the guys are watching because they even got the word. Geico said, he said, "Pal," you know how you call everybody pal. He said, "Pal," he said, "I got some good news and I got some bad news."
Yeah.
I think, what can this be? The place is packed. This is what we work for.
Yeah.
I said, "Well, what's the good news?" He said, "The good news is Billy sold all your shirts." He said, "Every one of them." I said, "What's the bad news?" He said, "He sold them for $1 a piece." I lost $1 a shirt. We hadn't even gone in the ring yet. We hadn't even gone. Can you imagine? We was wrestling Ed Waskowski and Tank Patton. You think they wasn't had a handful of that night?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I know Tank very well. I knew him quite well. Doug was a good friend of mine.
Yes, he was a great guy.
Yep, great guy. Oh,
that's the
man.
Last time
$1
I'm ever telling that T-shirt story on this program ever. Never.
Well, you know your friend Bob Roop
yes.
quite well, don't you?
Yes, very well.
Okay, well, Bob and I were going out to the Hall of Fame inductions in Waterloo, Iowa. And Bob was telling me how he was going to drive, that he only had 145,000 miles on his van, and that it had four brand-new recap tires on it, and that he was going to take and drive. And I said, "Well, Bob, I just got a new Chevy HHR. Why don't I go ahead and drive?" Well, he kind of argued with me for a minute, and then he figured out that my new car with no mileage would be a lot better than riding in one with 145,000 on it. And so he went ahead and said, "Well, yeah, you can go ahead and drive." So I left my house in Toledo and went up to near Lansing where he lives, Lansing, Michigan, picked him up, and he come out, put his gear in the back end, and went to scooch into the front seat. And he was having some problems trying to wedge himself in there. He was probably right around that 300-pound mark at the time. And so he finally got himself pushed in there, and his knees are up against the dash and kind of crunched in there. And so I said, "Well, Bob, if you reach over on the side of the seat and pull on that lever," I said, that'll let the back and give you a little bit more room. He did, and it felt a lot better to him. So I drove 500 miles that day to Waterloo, Iowa, and he was scrunched up all the way there. Next morning, we had breakfast and went across the street to get the car to go out to the golf tournament. And he, same scenario, he backed himself into that seat and kind of scrunched himself in. And he was belly aching about little cars and, you know, how they don't have any room in them and yada, 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 yada. And I said, "Well, Bob, why don't you reach down in front, in the lower section of that front seat there, reach down underneath there and pull on that bar and see if it'll let back any." He did, and the seat let back almost a foot and a half. He turned to me and he says, "You dirty no good, you let me ride 500 miles like that?" And I said, "Bob, you never asked me if there was another lever down there that would let the seat back. You just sat there and grumbled."
For real, that
but,
was.
You know, it's just things like that that just make your day. You know, to be able to take and help somebody out like a former Olympian, Bob Roop, you know, and make him feel wanted and loved. But, you know, those are just some things that that we do when we have more time than we have anything else to sit and think about.
We were in Mobile a few years ago, and Scott Teal brought me a picture that he had found somewhere. It was made when I was probably 17, 18 years old. And
okay.
Bob came in the room where we were, and I said, "Look here, Bob." I said, "Here's some promo pictures I had made earlier in the week. I think I'm going to try to make a comeback." He looked at the picture and he looked at me. He said, "You've had a horrible week, hadn't you, kid?"
Oh, if any of you guys happen to know Dave Brzezinski from Detroit.
Yeah.
He used to manage the Sheik in some of his earlier years, and also a guy by the name of Malcolm Monroe.
Yeah.
But Dave and I were set to go over to Chicago. We were going over to Alicia's house, which was a food bank that served South Chicago and run by a former wrestler. He's a minister now by the name of Juan Hernandez. And anyway, Dave and I were planning on going for quite a while, but never really got a chance to take and settle down and figure out who was going to take and drive. So I ended up driving, and we got over to just east of South Bend, Indiana. And stopped and used a restroom there. And I was commenting to Dave that there was a couple of WWF semis that were out there in the parking lot. And I wondered, you know, who was on board and so forth. And so Dave ended up going in using the bathroom. And I picked up my cell phone and I called my friend. And I said, I'm 20 miles out. I'll see you in about 20 minutes. Okay. So I let off the phone, and out come Dave, and we start back on the turnpike. We get off at the bypass for South Bend, and we go south and pick up Highway 2, and we were starting to go across, and I'm over in the left-hand lane looking for a street to go down to my buddy's house. We were going to have dinner there, and all of a sudden I look in a rearview mirror, and here's red and blue lights. And I turned to Dave. I said, what are we getting pulled over for? What's this? He says, I don't know, but you better pull over. So I did in the center, and the cop had me pull over to the right-hand side. And what's the first cardinal rule when the police pull you over? Never get out of the car, right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
So I pile out of the car, and I go back, and I start hollering at him. You lousy gumshoe, haven't you got anything better to do? Why don't you go raid a donut shop or something instead of pulling me over? I'm trying to find an address. And so he kept pushing me back up to the car, and he finally made me get back in and sit down. And he's talking to us, and I'm really giving him what for. And Dave kept grabbing my arm saying, shut up, you're going to get us taken to jail now. Doggone it, shut up. Just give him what he wants, tell him what he wants, and we'll be on our way. So finally, I asked the cop, I said, why did you pull us over anyways? He said, you were both just up in a rest area up there on a turnpike, weren't you? And Dave, of course, pipes right up, yes, sir, we were. And he says, well, you both started a big fight back there, and there's some injuries and some people that's pretty messed up. He says, I'm here to take you both in. And Dave says, we didn't do anything. And then finally I pushed out on the door, darn near shoved my buddy right out into some oncoming traffic. And I said, I've had enough of this stuff, Dave. And he's grabbing me by the arm and telling me, don't go out there. You're going to get us taken to jail. So Jack, the police officer, shoves me up against the side of the car. And he says, and stay there. And he leans down and he says to Dave, he says, you, outside on the other side. And Dave says, oh, man, we're going to jail. Oh, damn it. And he's really upset. Jack walked around to the other side of the car after he had me up against the side and telling me not to move. And he walks around there and he says, hi, my name is Jack Pavlikovich, and you've just been had. Welcome to South Bend. Dave would not talk to me for the next 2 hours. He was so mad, he was spitting. He says, how long have you been setting this up? I said, oh, about 2 years.
Should have been relieved.
Oh, I'm telling you what. He thought he was going to jail.
Yeah, we have actually had the Super Mouth on as a guest on our program a couple
really?
Times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Great guy. Dave's a great guy. Yep. He's pretty funny with doing stuff like that, but he was not amused that day, I'm telling you. And then the thing that hurt him the worst was we checked into a hotel that Juan had set up for us in Indiana, just not 10 miles from where we were at, and we met over at a Chinese buffet, and Dave came over with a plate full of food and sat down in front of Juan, and he says, "Can you believe what this guy did to me today?" And Juan says, "Oh, you mean about the cop pulling you over?" Dave was fit to be tied. He says, "How many more people know about this?" And I said, "Well, Dave, let's see, there's from Topeka to Tampa to Tokyo. Let's see, how many more can I call?" But, you know, that's all the fun of having fun, and it was a way that we kept together, and, you know, just seeing who could outdo who. But, you know, bottom line on it, you know, we both still like each other a lot. We're great friends, and, you know, nobody got hurt, nothing real serious, but, you know, other than his pride. But that's what I love about the business.
Well, during your time in Kansas City, you probably came across Mike Boyette and Mickey Doyle when they were in there as the hippies, didn't you?
I certainly did, and what a pair. The first promo that they did, Mickey was talking, and Mike Boyette took his hanky out and blew his nose and then started looking at it, and Mickey never missed a lick. And Bill Kirsten, the poor announcer, he almost threw up. Oh, Bill used to put up with an awful lot of stuff from us. You know, they just honored him out at the Cauliflower, and I thought it was very nice. He didn't know anything about the award that he got for announcer, but he had heard that he was going to be getting an award, and that was the guy that was the one of the five survivors of the Oklahoma bombing. He presented the guys that were from the Kansas City promotion that were there with each with a state flag. It was like 5 foot by 8 foot, and talked very nicely about everybody, sometimes a little bit more than what he needed to, but I thought it was a nice presentation. He sounded a little bit like Bobby.
Yeah. Yeah, it did get a little wordy there, but it was a nice gesture. I mean, that's...
Yes, it was. Very, very nice.
Very
and,
nice.
And to present everybody with flags, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the whole highlight of this year's Cauliflower, and this is just my own personal opinion with thinking about this, was the young kid Terry Levitt. I don't know whether you, Bobby, whether you had a chance to meet him or not.
Yes,
that
I
was
did.
Deep.
Yes, I
quadriplegic
did.
Kid that drew a picture using only his mouth, and he said he worked on that thing over 10 hours, and I told him that I would be auctioning the thing off, and I wondered what would be a fair price for it. Well, he told me that his last one that he had, that he had sold, the biggest sale that he had was like $100 or $150. He couldn't remember which one it was, and I ended up getting $450 out of that picture. I thought that was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was.
You know, every year I try to put a little bit back into the Cauliflower by doing things like that. Giving back is something that we as professionals can do. And, you know, just like telling stories or being here on the radio and just having fun, you know, and not hurting anybody for sure. I talk about Columbus, but I think about Columbus, Ohio, not Georgia. Is that better now?
I didn't know there was a Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, state capital.
There is until about 6 o'clock at night. That's when they roll the sidewalks up.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
When Barnett first decided, we first decided to start doing those tours out of the Atlanta office, we went up there for that first show at the Ohio Center, and,
mm-hmm.
and the opening night, we were there the opening weekend on Sunday night. Saturday night, they had Jerry Lee Lewis and Conway Twitty, and they did less than a half a house. And we sold out that place in 13 minutes when they put the tickets on sale.
No kidding.
And we went in there, and when the matches were over, the plane to Atlanta didn't leave till like 4:30 in the morning, so we had to find something to do. there wasn't nothing to do.
Right.
I finally went next door and bribed the bartender at the Hyatt Regency Hotel to let us hang out in the bar, you know, and just close the doors and let us hang out in there. And I told him, I said, well, you know, I gave the guy some cash, and he let us stay there until it was time to catch a cab and go back. But
wow.
Yeah, it was amazing to me that a college, and maybe around a college it might be different, but, I mean, to be a capital city, I thought, God, this place is dead.
Yep. You betcha. Well, speaking of capitals, is the capital of Kentucky, is that pronounced Louisville or Louisville?
It's Frankfort.
Oh, smarty.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Somebody almost said Louisville.
Well, I spent the weekend in Corbin, Kentucky 2 weeks ago, so I caught up on my Kentucky.
Okay. All right. Well, my condolences to you.
Well, now, I didn't know. You know, now this ain't got nothing to do with nothing, but I had no idea Corbin, Kentucky was where Kentucky Fried Chicken originated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I didn't know that. They didn't have a sign or anything. I just happened to read that on something while I was up there.
Well, did you remember the Viking when he was in Kansas City?
Yes.
He made a statement about me in the program that trusting Percival A. Friend would be like Colonel Sanders babysitting your pet chicken. Nice
<That's>
guy.
Good.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I mean, I thought it was pretty neat. Wow. There's another guy that I miss. You know, he was a rifle bearer, or he was on the squad whenever Harry Truman went somewhere, he went with him to guard him.
Really?
Yes, sir.
He's
buried in Leavenworth Cemetery also.
What was his name?
Bob Morse.
Bob Morse.
I'm wondering, I met a guy that wrestled as the Viking when I went out to Dean Silverstone's with Charlie Smith 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that was him.
No, he's been dead.
Is he?
Probably not.
Okay. There was a guy out there that said he worked as the Viking, and I didn't remember his name, but that's not him.
Bob stayed in Gladstone, Missouri. Matter of fact, he was a deputy sheriff there. A part-time deputy sheriff. I think he just did it just to get the commission and to, you know, to be able to take and carry the badge with him wherever he needed to go. You know, one of the things that he used to do back in the day, he used to drive great big huge Chrysler Imperials back in his earlier days. And he would take and get on the highway and be going to a town, and in the front seat of his car, he'd set the cruise control up and twist around and put his feet up on the seat and damn near fall asleep on us going to a town. But he thought it was pretty funny, you know, that he was able to take and do that. But I always liked Bob. He was a funny, funny guy. He was... quite the performer in the ring, too. Yep. Luckiest guy I ever seen playing poker, too. Whew. Man, he used to get some good hands. But that's another time. I better not be talking about gambling. You know, we're supposed to be upstanding citizens. Well, at least some of us.
That leaves Jerry and I out,
So we're done.
Well, Bobby, did you ever tell the story about how you got pulled over and you had guns and money in the
truck?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
And you have? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I remember you telling us out there at breakfast that one morning.
Yeah.
That story.
Yeah. That's the scariest ever been in my life, to get out of that car and see that gun pointed at me. And the cop was shaking worse than me.
Was this when you robbed that 7-Eleven?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he just
That's
went
when
in
he
there
and
Romero Dell
knocked over the liquor store.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. He just went in there to get a money order, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That way you wouldn't have to carry all that cash on you.
Whew. Goodness. Mm.
So, is anybody going out to Waterloo in July?
No, my wife has told me I've done all the traveling I'm doing this year.
And you believed her?
Yes, sir. I certainly did.
And you answered that with yes, ma'am, or no, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am. I said, whatever you say. She was kind enough to let me go to Vegas, and she was kind enough to let me go to Mobile, so I will stay home with her.
Well, what did you think about the T-shirt sales there in Vegas this year, speaking of T-shirts?
Well, I mean, he sold out.
Darn right he did, and record time.
I did that in 1975.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Charlie was just ragging and bagging on me about changing the color from black to, he sold them in purple this year. And he was saying, they better sell out or I'm coming to get you and yada, 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 yada. And I'm thinking, okay. Well, I ended up proving him wrong on that theory because they sold out real fast.
Yeah, we sold out on, I can't remember if we went into Wednesday or not. We might have sold out Tuesday.
I think you had a few of them left on Wednesday, some of those small and medium ones.
Yeah, maybe. You know, there was very few. We were about 11 o'clock. We didn't have anything left on Wednesday.
Yeah. Them small ones like the midgets used to wear.
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
Speaking of midgets, Bobby was telling me something about you and Darling Dagmar last year, not this year.
Oh, yeah, well, please. Yeah. I've heard it put a lot of different ways.
Yes.
But... he had Dagmar up to his room to upload some music.
I did?
Well, you know, that's what
and
I told her. She
happened.
Was sitting there, and I said, look, I said, you know, I'll tell you like Mae West said, come on, darling, you can speak plainer than that.
That's right. Tell it like it is. No, Kathy and I are good friends.
Oh, what a darling. Golly.
Yes, you know, when I heard about her getting her leg broke and them having to push a 12-inch rod into her leg to hold it straight and steady, I'm thinking to myself, oh, boy, she's going to be fun going through a metal detector at the airport.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Yes, sir. But, you know, that's quite traumatic, when you get above 50. And, you know, Oates, you got to listen to this now because you're
yes,
getting
sir.
That way. When you get above 50, you know, them old bones and stuff, they'll bust real easily. So you got to stay in shape. You can't be out there half-stepping. You got to, get it with your good foot.
I'm still in shape.
Oh, you are?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hell. We'll have to stop at Perry, Oklahoma on the way to Las Vegas.
Yeah,
you 4 weeks.
Oh, man. So, anyways, this has been fun. I don't think that I've sat on the phone for so long in quite a while. It must be Mr. Oates that's doing it to me.
Well,
it's been great having you on, I tell you.
Yeah,
well,
we were.
I
was just, you were just sitting here talking, and you were talking earlier about the guys today are flying, and that's a great thing. You know, I'm glad they don't have to beat themselves up. But, you know, I think one of the greatest things about our business was the – Bill Bowman put it this way, and I never heard it put this way, but he hit the nail right on the head. We found ways to entertain ourselves because we were together all the time.
Absolutely.
And we had to. And you know, we did that in the cars, talking, and you know, you were talking about the people you worked with, and you never raised your voice. You know, I mean, I just, I think back. I think of my friend Rocket Monroe, who we lost several years ago. Me and Rocket were friends. He befriended me when I was 14 years old, putting up the TV ring in Atlanta. Just some kid that wanted to hang around, and we never raised our voice at each other. We never, you know. And just it's tough to find folks like that.
Yes, it is, and it's a friendship that I wish that I would have known that he was still alive because I might have made a trip over to Scotland to visit with him before he passed. But I assumed that he was already dead because Billy Robinson had told me, that he had died years before that, and I just took him at his word. Have you had Les Thornton on?
No,
on the radio.
Get in contact with him. He'd be a great one to have.
I can probably send you an email, and then you can contact him that way. I don't have a landline number on him, but I'm sure that he would be happy to take and come on. He was another one that Angus and I pulled some ribs on, but I won't go into that right now. Angus and him were very, very good friends. And, you know, the surprising part about it, the night that Angus and I split, the following week, he wrestled up against Les Thornton. And it was a good guy versus good guy. And Angus looked at him as they were getting ready to go out to the ring back in the dressing room. He looked and he says, "You're going to be the first one that they're going to boo." And Thornton looked at him and he says, "Ah, bullocks," you know, which is not a good word for the radio station, but I cleaned it up a little bit. But needless to say, he was pretty you know, sure that he was not going to be the first one to get a boo out of the crowd. And he was the first one that threw the first punch in the match. Angus had him so riled up, he didn't know what end was up. He kept looking at him, and he was cross-eyed. And then Thornton would try and cross-eye him back. And then he'd start just doing little itty-bitty things that just annoyed the living daylights out of poor Thornton. And Thornton ended up giving him a couple of good chops to the gut. And that's when he kind of made the list that night. And I thought it was kind of funny. So, yeah, we did a lot of stuff like that. You know, another great guy that was out there was Roger Kirby. And Kirby and I had a run together for, I would think probably around 6 months that they had us teamed up with me as manager and him, you know, with the belt on there, the Central States belt. But Roger and I had a lot of fun. Billy Howard was there, had a lot of fun with him as well. And Mike George, I used to call him the St. Joe Blimp. That was his CB handle. No, seriously, that was his CB handle. So I would call him that from the ringside, and, of course, the fans didn't know what the heck I was talking about. And he kept jumping up and hollering, "Don't call me fat." He says, "It's just padding." But Mike was a good hand. Mike is working for Billy Howard. He's cleaning carpets, and he also he does a couple of other jobs that I think he's in security yet up at the racetrack where Geigel still works 1 or 2 days a week, and he's in his 80s. But I would still not want somebody like Geigel to come around a corner and catch me doing something. I think he could still stretch somebody even if he didn't want to.
I'm sure he could.
Yep.
Billy Howard is probably the funniest human being I've ever met in my life. And he had a very dry sense of humor.
Did he ever tell you the story of when he was in a restaurant and there was three or four of the other boys with him? They were eating and waitress come over and she says, "Oh, I know you. You're so-and-so and you're so-and-so and you're so-and-so." She says, "But I don't know you." And Billy got out of the booth and laid down on the floor and looked up and says, "You recognize me now?"
That sounds like him.
Listen,
yep.
I won't tell the whole story, but Gene Anderson was booking here, and he told me and him one night, he said, "Look, we were in a mixed tag match, two midget girls and against him and Jerry Stubbs, and we were working in Jerry Stubbs' hometown."
Yeah.
And Gene says, "Jerry is so hyped up, said you couldn't drive a grease nail up his tail, said I want you guys to keep it real serious and keep him grounded." And we go outside the dressing room, we're standing there, and Bill's wife was sitting there, and Bill's wife was running a beauty shop in the same town.
Right.
And she comes over to me and him, and she looks at us, and she goes, "Don't y'all do anything to embarrass me, because I have to work in this town, and I can't stand it." So we go out to the ring, and the girls were Marie Laveau, a little red-headed midget girl from Louisiana, and
right.
Princess Little Dove had them long pigtails. And
right.
We did a little false tag deal, and I was pushing Jerry out of the ring, and when I turned around, Bill had that little midget up in the air choking her. And he was bouncing her, and she looked like one of Colonel Sanders' chickens with them little pigtails flopping to and fro. And I looked to the back, and Gene Anderson was just shaking his head. And I told Bill, I said, well, we're fired, so we might as well have some fun.
Oh, man. Wow.
Oh, what a funny guy.
He was, yes, he is. I've known Bill since the early 70s when he came down to Kansas City. He had, it was 73 or 74 when he came down from Milwaukee. And he and I and one other guy and Angus rode in his car. He had a Oldsmobile, four-door Oldsmobile. And Angus was up front, and he had his head leaned over against the window and had fallen asleep, and he was snoring. Oh, my God, could that guy snore? And I sat in the back, and I wrote a little note to Billy and passed it up to him while he's driving, and it said, wouldn't it be a shame if you was to hit the wrong button and let that window down and then let it back up and catch Angus's hair in it? And I no sooner had handed it to him, he looked, and all of a sudden the window went down, and you could hear Angus's neck cracking clear in the back seat. And then Billy says, oh, my God, I'm sorry, and he rolled it back up, and he's got Angus's long hair pulling it right straight up, you know, with the window. And Angus is screaming at him. He was calling him every name but a white man. So Billy let the window back down. He says, gosh, I'm sorry. He says, I must have hit the wrong button. And trying to keep from, he was biting his own tongue to keep from laughing. Angus looked at him and he just says, I don't think it's so funny, you.
Didn't Charlie Fulton living up that way somewhere?
Charlie
you?
Fulton? Yeah, he lives about 60 miles south of me here in, I think it's Marion, Ohio.
Yeah, that's right. Charlie was on our
show. I've got his number here someplace if you want me to send it down.
No, I've got it because he's actually done our show too.
Good guy.
We tracked him down. Yeah, he was.
He was there at Scott's reunion. They're in Nashville. He came down.
Yeah, Tennessee
him
was
and,
one of the.
Do what?
That was one of the few places that Charlie actually got a push. He probably didn't make any money, but he at least got a push there.
Yeah. Yep. Sure did. I don't know. There was quite a few guys that weren't happy with Nashville, but. I didn't have to worry too much. When I went in, I was supposed to have gotten X amount of dollars and for trance and then X amount for wrestling that night. And they had handed me a big envelope, and it looked pretty good until I opened it up, and it was all dollar bills.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think there's been an error. And the guy said, no, that's what you're getting paid. And I thanked him, and I walked outside and called Buddy Rogers. And he said, kid, can you be in Mansfield, Ohio tomorrow night? And I said, I sure can. He says, forget about the rest of your bookings for the rest of the week. And about a week later, I was up in upstate New York. It was either Elmira or Binghamton. And Buddy handed me an envelope with all my money in it. And I said to him, I said, well, what do you want me to do with this other? He said, keep it. That's a tip from Nick Goulas, and that's the first one you'll ever get and the last one anybody will ever get. So that was the end of that. So that was my fun experiences of working in Nashville.
Yeah, that's,
but, you know, things happen. You know, that's the business, and that's the way that Mr. Goulas thought that he should take and do people. But, you know, it changed later on in life.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. So what's everybody going to do this weekend?
I've actually got, I'm going to make some phone calls for the circus and send out some press releases. And I was telling the guys before I got you on the air, I may take a little while and go to Fall River, Massachusetts to the Lizzie Borden house.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
This is probably the last time we ever talk to you.
Mr. Oates is going to tell us that he's wrestling this weekend.
Who? Jerry. He's wrestling with the all the people. Jerry didn't tell you what he's doing now. He didn't quite go into that. Jerry is the official game warden and deputy sheriff of Tybee Island, Georgia.
No kidding.
Well,
I'm
going to
stay away from there. I'm going to stay away from there. I know that.
Well, I know it's court clerk, so.
Oh, okay. All right.
They gave him
you're
a
out there.
He's happy.
Oh, okay. Oh, you do good up here. We have a big walleye run right here on the Maumee River, and they got people elbow to elbow out there when they're running. And what a mess that is! And half of them don't have licenses. Those game wardens just have themselves a ball.
Oh, I hear that.
Yep. So what kind of game do you have down there in Georgia? What, you don't have moose, you don't have Knights of Pythias, and you don't have any Shriners? Oh, yeah, you got Shriners down
Shriners,
there.
Shriners, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all intoxicated.
But, no moose, though, right?
No moose.
How about elk? You have
no,
any elk?
We got a coyote.
A coyote?
Yep.
Now, that's not nice to talk about Bobby Simmons that way.
Yeah. I got news for you. We got wild coyotes right here in Atlanta. I mean, they're
really... Well, yeah, I've met a few of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I dated a couple of them.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, they're coming down out of the hills here and getting people's pets and stuff.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
They're right here.
Rough.
They're in Savannah, too.
Wow. Man, I've seen those out in Death Valley, but I've never seen them down in that area. I had one come right up to the car and wanting something to eat. I was just coming out of Death Valley Scotty's castle down there, and I had part of a sandwich with me, and I threw it out, and that coyote just grabbed right onto it and chomped right down. He was hungry. Yep. I seen my first roadrunner out there, too. Yep. That was a lot of fun. So, anyways,
roadrunner?
No, I think it was a roadrunner was, or the other way around. The roadrunner was chasing a coyote. But, anyway, how late is your program going to run till?
Oh, midnight. You only got to talk about two more hours.
Is that right? Wow.
You'd be talking to yourself.
Yeah.
That's all, folks.
Now,
yeah.
Those, we haven't had Dick Steinbore on in a while, so those days don't happen very often anymore.
Well, is that good or bad?
Dick has always been a great guest. It's just when... he gets wound up, and it's time to start winding the show down. He's always got one more story he wants to tell before.
Well, absolutely. You know, storytelling's the biggest part of our business.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. You know, Bobo Brazil was probably one of the greatest pranksters that there ever was, and he even got his best friend up there. In Benton Harbor, Reverend Tim Hampton, and they were they had went down to Chicago to watch the Cubs during the daytime, and Bobo got to chumming with some of his friends, and they went over there to their place, and before you know it, it was like 7-8 o'clock in the evening, and they had to leave at midnight from Benton Harbor to make Washington D.C. the following afternoon, and. Tim ended up driving. He come over, and Bobo had not went to sleep. And so Tim had a brand-new Chevrolet, I believe it was 65 or 66 Chevy, and nice-looking car. And so anyway, Bobo had not went to sleep, and as soon as he hit the car, he told Tim, he says, why don't you drive for a little bit? And he says, I'll take over in a bit. And he says, we can make it on in pretty easily. And Tim thought, well, it's okay. And he ended up driving down until he hit the Ohio Turnpike. And asked Bobo to take over, and Bobo says, well, pull into that restaurant down there. He says, I got something in my eye. I can't see quite straight. And Bobo kept pulling that on him all the way till they got to Breezewood, Pennsylvania. And Tim was just dogged tired. But they were only like a little over 100 miles to Baltimore at that point. So Bo ended up driving into Baltimore, and they went out to work that night, and Tim was just so tired, he couldn't hardly see straight. But, you know, he went out there, and he did his thing, and they were called back into the dressing room, and the promoter there asked him if they could go to Akron, Ohio the following night, that one of the guys had a death in the family. I think it was the Brunetti brothers. One of them had lost, it was either father or mother or something like that, and they needed a tag team to go in there and take their place that night. So Bo said, yeah, we'll go, no problem. So they get out of the arena there in D.C. and get back on the turnpike, and Bo says to Tiny, he says, hey, he said, why don't we take this in 100-mile drives? You got a little thing up here on the dashboard, a little odometer that we keep track of. Just set it for 100 miles, and when you reach that, it will switch drivers. Well, Tim thought that was the greatest thing in the world, and Bo says, and I'll tell you what, he says, I feel pretty good right now. He says, I've slept most of last night. He says, I'll take the first drive. So Bo got in behind the wheel and drove 51 miles and reached up and pulled that or changed that odometer back to where it would read 100 miles. And he shook Tim, who was in the back seat, just snoring his butt off. Tim got up there and fought sleep for the next hour and a half. And finally gave it back to Bo, and Bo got up there and drove 27 miles and reached up and twisted that odometer back to read 100 miles and shook Tim, and Tim come back up behind the wheel, and he says, man, feels like I just went to sleep. He said, wow, this is really something. So he drove another 100 miles, and Bo did it to him again. He drove like 34 miles and told Tim to get back up there, but he had just pulled in to a rest area, got himself a big cup of coffee. He's sitting over in the passenger side, and Tim's driving, and all of a sudden Tim just hit the brakes. He said to Bo, he says, you dirty SOB, how long you been doing this to me? And Bo says, look at your car, coffee all over the place. What the heck's wrong with you? And Tim says, I went to sleep. He says, it was 6 o'clock. He says, it's 20 after 6 right now, and there ain't no way in hell that you drove no 100 miles. And he said, you get back over here and drive. So Bo kind of apologetic to him, and he didn't want to let in that he had done him in, but this was his best friend in the world. So Bo ended up driving the rest of the way into Akron, and they got in there and checked in at this hotel, and they healed the room. Now, you know what healing the room is. One guy pays, and the other guy stays. So anyway, they got up to the room, and Bo says, I'm going to go down and get me a coffee or some breakfast. He says, do you want me to bring you something back? And Tim says, no. He says, I want to get some sleep. He says, I've been up all damn night long driving. And so Tim always slept with nothing on, right up on top of – he was up on top of the box springs that was in the room. And Bo went downstairs and come back up maybe a half hour later, 45 minutes, something like that, after he'd eaten. And he brought up a newspaper, and they had those old metal trash cans in the room that sit underneath the writing desk and stuff. And Bo took and poured some water – in the bottom of it, about an inch full of water, and he threw one of the pieces of lit newspaper in there and had the room just smoking and smoking, and he hollered at Tim, get up, get out of here, the room's on fire, you've been smoking while you were sleeping. Blah, and out the door Tim went and ain't got a stitch on. And Bobo went behind him and pulled the door shut. He says, oh, man, he says, have you got a key? And he looked at Tim, and Tim says, you dirty, no good. And so Bo went downstairs and got the house detective and told him some pervert's up there running around with no clothes on, and you need to go up there and arrest him. And they sent up two of the biggest security guards that they had, And Tim looked at both of them, and he says, if there's anything left of me when you get done with me, he says, his butt is mine. Oh. And needless to say, they had a tag team that night. And every time Tim turned around, he was punching Bobo with his elbow, or he was running into him by accident. Oh. And Bobo ended up driving all the way back to Benton Harbor from Akron, Ohio. But, you know, those are just some fun times that Bo used to have.
Now, see, he had that hotel incident happen with Don Fargo. He just strutted down to the hotel lobby himself and got the key.
I heard a little, well, I heard a story with Fargo and Bobby Davis, but I won't get into it.
More than likely true.
Don could actually, you could write a book about Don Fargo.
Most
of it would be true.
In Mobile, we've always stayed at the Red Roof Inn, but everybody always complains about it, but, you know. So one year they moved us to the Shoney's Inn across the street. Me and Charlie Smith had the inn room on the first floor. And we're laying on the bed one day, and the door's open, you know, and we notice people stopping, you know, and staring out. You know, they ride by in the parking lot and pointing up, you know, different things going on. So finally I got up off the bed and walked out there, and Fargo was standing on the balcony over our room, didn't have a stitch on. He just standing out on the balcony, sunning and watching people.
Yep.
You know,
that wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me a bit.
He was probably trying to figure out how many sheets it would take to swing off that balcony.
I heard that. Or how many sheets in the wind he was.
Probably in the day, he was probably quite a few sheets in the wind.
Oh, geez. Ooh.
Yeah. But, you know, Don led a very good life. He was very active, and he was a general in the ring. I'm going to tell you.
Oh yeah.
That guy, he was way, way, way ahead of his time in doing what he was doing. So, what's all that ding dong stuff coming from?
That's the clock on my mantle to let Michael know we got about 6 minutes.
Oh. Okay. Well, then I should probably take and back up a little bit and let Mr. Oates get in there and do his thing.
Oh, I'm fine.
You're fine?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
You mean you don't want to talk about going out and arresting somebody for running over a polecat?
No, sir.
No? Okay. Well, and you've probably been out on a few of them, haven't you? Or not? Not yet?
I haven't seen any polecats down there.
Really?
No.
I'll have to send a couple down your way.
Don't do it.
I know a few. Oh.
I'll send Charlie Smith down. There'll be a polecat down there on Tybee Island.
Yeah, that'd be close enough. Heck yeah.
Well, let me say this. Let me throw a plug in for the people who've been listening and who download and listen to the archive on this later, the stories that Al has told tonight. He has one of the best websites that I started reading it about 10 years ago, and I've probably read most of the stories two or three times. In fact, I went back and I spent about 2 hours last night reading some of your stories, and they're just as funny to read as they are with him telling them. And the name of the website is The Way It Was. And
right, or
very,
you can
very
plug
very
in.
Good.
You can plug in PercivalAFriend.com, and that'll get you there too.
Yep. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I loaded with some great photos that he's taken over the years, and just what you've heard tonight on here just tops is the tip of the iceberg as far as the stories that he's written on there, and some of the stuff that you've written on there that you've done in a kind of a kayfabe style is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
About Danny Little Bear and the turn with Angus and all that stuff. This stuff is just what an imagination. You should write a book.
Well, I already have, and I'm giving it away.
Who did you give it to?
I gave it to the internet, week by week by week, like a big dummy. I gave it away for NO.
Well, I thought maybe you found Bill in Wichita and sell your book.
Yeah, there's a guy out there can sell them for you. He'll get rid of it for you. I promise you that.
You know who I thought you were going to tell me was selling your stuff? Was old Gabe.
Old Jack Gabe.
Dillon. Yep.
What a guy he was.
Him too. Wasn't he funny?
I love him.
His the ring truck broke down, his van, and he asked Frankie Diamond to pull him back to Kansas, or back to St. Joe, to where he could get his van fixed. You know that was the first time that van ever was over 55 mile an hour?
I don't doubt it.
Frankie pulled him at 80 and 90.
I believe that.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I miss old Gabe. He was quite the guy.
He was a nice man.
I miss Gus Karras, too. He was an all right guy in my book.
Yeah, he was all right.
I was in Kansas City here a few years back and did a documentary and called KC on the Mat. And the guy asked me to take and do 20 minutes at the airport, and I ended up going to Kansas City Memorial Hall and doing the interview right underneath the ring lights. And I did like 2.5 hours with him. And I thought it turned out very, very well. So, anyways, there's been a lot of highlights to my life. I've been very fortunate in being elected into 5 different Hall of Fames so far. And plus received a lot of other stuff. I guess I did my job right, you know, along with all the other guys that I was associated with, including Jerry and Ted Oates and all the other guys that worked in the Kansas City area. And I can say truthfully and honestly, I appreciate every bit of help that you guys gave me in getting where I got. And, you know, me as well as in turn giving you guys back. It meant a lot to me, and it still does. And I hope, you know, sometime maybe in the future we can have another one of these sessions, and I'll get to maybe unload on somebody else.
I hope it's not me.
Listen, go down there and play with them elk and moose and the Knights of Pythias and the Masons and the Shrines and everything else. Go on down there and take care of business.
I'm going to do that.
Yes, sir. And Mr. Oates, it's been a real service pleasuring you tonight.
I've enjoyed it myself.
Oh, gentlemen, I really appreciate the time and all the efforts that you guys do putting together this program, and especially for thinking so much of me to come and be a part of it. I really enjoyed tonight, honestly.
You made it special.
Yep, we appreciate it.
Well, all I can say is may God ride with you and be your tag team partner at the same time.
You can't do that.
Amen.
That's enough to set everything off.
Yes,
so,
sir. Good note to end
with
it
that,
on.
I'm going
to
bid everybody a good night, and also good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Amen. Thanks, Al.
All right, my pleasure.
Thanks,
all right, bye-bye.
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 All right, I told you this was going to be a good one.
Very good.
All right, guys, well, we'll get together next Thursday and see what kind of trouble we can get in then. You guys have a good Memorial Day weekend, and I'll catch you guys down the road next week.
I'll be here wrestling the lawnmower doing yard work Saturday. If anybody's interested in dropping by, I'll be glad to tag out.
It's a bit too far from Massachusetts from me, but my heart will be with you.
I understand. Have a great weekend, guys.
Y'all be safe.
All right. Bye-bye. See you guys later. Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.